Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, what is traditionist feminism as defined by the Arevot Beit Midrash? Dr. Angie Cohen was born and raised in Madrid, Spain, and moved to Israel in 2014. She has a BA in psychology and an MA in philosophy. She received her PhD in 2017 from the Hebrew University of Jerusalem and the Universidad Autónoma of Madrid through a joint PhD program. She's currently a postdoctoral researcher at the Azrieli Institute of Israel Studies of Concordia University in Montreal, Canada. Besides her academic activities, she's a member of the Arevot Beit Midrash, House of Learning, in Jerusalem. Held at the campus of the Sephardic Educational Center in Jerusalem, this is a new Sephardic-themed Torah study program for women. It's led by Sephardic women who explore Sephardic answers to the challenges of modernity. They deal with issues related to the identity of the Sephardic Mizrahi woman in Israel today, as well as gender-related halachic issues. This week, Angie is speaking with us about Aravot and Sephardic Mizrahi feminism. Thank you very much for speaking with us today, Angie.
Thank you.
Since one of your areas of work is Sephardi Mizrahi women, I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about how they're viewed from the outside. I think I mentioned to you in an email, we recently spoke with Nomi Drashinsky about the concept of the Frecha, which is a negative stereotype of Sephardi Jewish women of Moroccan origin. Yeah. And how some women who are characterized in this way have actually started to take pride in it. So I was wondering if you could comment on that a little bit.
Sure. I mean, there are so many ways one could answer this. But basically, the stereotype of the Mizrahi woman is the Frecha, meaning someone who has a very limited education, who has been socialized in a very conservative and vulgar world. And so the stereotype is anything but an academic or someone who is familiar with the more, let's say, sophisticated ways of thinking. So yeah, that's the basic stereotype, someone who's very conservative, not very developed, and whose life aspirations are very limited.
Is a distinction usually made between Sephardi and Mizrahi Jews, not just women,
so
but
it's
in general?
It's a thing. Yeah, so, I mean, the category Mizrahi, it's a social and political category. It's a completely empty category. There's no such a thing as Mizrahi. There was no such a thing as Mizrahi Jews before the establishment of the State of Israel. Mizrahi means Eastern, and Moroccans, who are in no way Eastern for geographical reasons, are the Mizrahi. So it's a marker. It's a social and political marker.
Is there also a stereotype of the men?
Yes, that would be the Ars. We have the Frecha and the Ars. Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And it's pretty much the same thing, aggressive, patriarchal, pre-modern, vulgar, bad taste, all that. And that would be the stereotype of the Mizrahi man, yeah.
Now, Israelis usually say that, yeah, okay, there were immigrants so many years ago, but then with their children, when they go to the army, everybody is sort of becomes equal, and now and they intermarry, and now there's no problem.
That's just not true. First of all, there is also a lot of discrimination in the army, and this has been widely researched. But the question of the marriages, of the marriage patterns, is very, very interesting. Because for a lot of Mizrahi women for a very long time, marrying an Ashkenazi man was also a way of guaranteeing a better future. So there is also interesting research done on the experience of Mizrahi men when trying to date Mizrahi women. Because for a long time, this, it would mean not being able to leave that that trap of being a Mizrahi. So, of course, there are more and more, let's say, mixed marriages between Ashkenazim and Mizrahim, more and more, for sure. But that does not stop racism. And the army is certainly not the setting in which ethnic differences disappear. Absolutely not.
Can you speak a little bit about how Mizrahi Jews, especially the women, are represented in Israeli culture and the media and TV?
Yeah. So women tend to be represented as oppressed, as victims of patriarchy, as having no agency. Do you know something that I realized while doing my research is that there is limited ethnographic research on Mizrahi women. There is some ethnographic research, but it's limited. I think this is very symptomatic. The fact that we don't hear their voices. There are some very, very interesting researchers, but there's a lot of ethnographic research of, for example, Holocaust survivors or kibbutzim, or that there is a lot of ethnographic research. But when it comes to Mizrahim, and especially to Mizrahi women, there is very limited research, which means, again, that you don't get to hear them speak for themselves about their story. It's always someone else who's speaking about them.
You were going to speak a little bit about movies. How do different Israeli and other Jewish movies represent them?
Yeah. So, for example, we have there's a movie that I really like, The Women's Balcony.
Oh, I love that movie.
It's a very interesting movie on many different levels. For example, the way in which traditional Jewish communities, meaning traditional like Masorati, traditional Jewish Sephardic communities work. It's a very interesting depiction of how they work and how they function and how far they are from the logic of Orthodoxy.
Maybe you should give our listeners a kind of a synopsis.
So basically, The Women's Balcony is a movie about a little synagogue in Jerusalem, a little Sephardic synagogue in Jerusalem, that the Women's Balcony, the Ezrat Nashim, collapses. One day it collapses. And they don't have money to repair it, and there's a big mess because of that. And then there is this rabbi who is an Orthodox rabbi and appears there and brings a minyan, brings men to pray with the other men, and also brings money to repair the synagogue. And when they repair it, the new synagogue doesn't have a women's balcony, it doesn't have a Ezrat Nashim. So the women of this synagogue rebel against this, and they leave their homes until their husbands stop this and bring back the women's balcony. And that's pretty much what the movie is about. And it shows the contradictions that Mizrahi women live in, because on the one hand, they are very connected, or they tend to be very connected to tradition, to Jewish tradition, to traditional values. But on the other hand, they're also women in 21st century Israel. And a lot of the markers that Israeli society, especially Israeli religious society, imposes on women, such as covering their head or not wearing pants, are not relevant for them. So this movie shows the tension between Sephardic communities and Orthodoxy, and how Sephardic communities have, in general, suffered tremendously from this encounter with Orthodoxy that questions their ways and that forces them to adopt attitudes that are not theirs, to adopt more stringent attitudes that are just not theirs, and to have to prove that they are legitimate Jews.
Is there any other movie you would like to comment on?
For example, I really liked Get. Mm-hmm. Get, or the divorce of Vivian Ansalem. It's also a very interesting movie. The movie's about the painful process of divorce in Israel, and they take the case of this woman, Vivian Ansalem, and it's in the difficult situation that women in Israel undergo when wanting to get a divorce, and their husbands don't collaborate. This very difficult situation is not obviously exclusive to Sephardic women, but it did. I must say that it did bother me a little bit that the husband was this Mizrahi who was violent and refused to give her life back. It bothered me a little bit that they had to choose a Mizrahi, because we know that this is something that men do, refusing their wives the divorce, and it's not exclusive of Mizrahi men in any possible way, shape, or form. But it is a very interesting movie to understand the hell that Israeli women have to go through when their husbands don't want to collaborate. And I don't, in getting a divorce, I don't think that this is in the agenda of the vast majority of the Jewish communities in the diaspora, for example. I don't think that the vast majority of Jewish communities in the diaspora are concerned about the question of the gets. And it is a pretty important question.
I'd like to talk a little now about your specific work on Sephardi and Mizrahi feminism. In Israel, you're a member of the Beit Midrash Arevot, is that right? Arevot?
Yes.
Which is a house of learning led by Sephardi women who explore Sephardi answers to the challenges of modernity. Can you tell us mm-hmm. about that?
Sure. So Arevot has just been like a miracle and an initiative that has brought me so much joy and freedom. Arevot is basically, yes, as you said, a Beit Midrash or a house of learning. It's a group of women, a group of, is majoritarily Sephardi Mizrahi, but there are some Ashkenazi women also. It's a group of women that get together to learn Sephardic sources from a feminist perspective. So by learning Sephardic sources that tend to not be part of the curricula, we are reclaiming the Sephardic attitude towards modernity. And we are learning really revolutionary and amazing Sephardic sources, rabbinic sources, that give solutions and alternatives to women in a modern world. The Beit Midrash was established in 2017, but the women that created it, their activism was prior to the establishment of the Beit Midrash, and they had been learning in an institution called Mimizrach Shemesh, and there was a program called Tidreshi Sham, and they learned there, and then sometime after they created this Beit Midrash, and the first year of the Beit Midrash, I joined them.
Is this in Jerusalem?
Yes, this is in Jerusalem, and most of the women that are part of the Beit Midrash live in Jerusalem, even though there's some that come from other parts of the country too.
How many women are involved in this?
It's hard to tell. Like, I would say that there's the the women that attend the meetings regularly are around 25. Wow. But there is a bigger group of women that participate in different activities that we do, even though they're not regulars of the Bet Midrash. And one of the peculiarities of this Bet Midrash is that we are not only a space of learning, but it's also a space of activism, in the sense that we also prepare answers to the challenges that women face today, especially Mizrahi women face today. So it's a group that tries to find a different voice that is not necessarily the feminist liberal voice of the Anglo-Saxon world, for example. The model is what they call in the Bet Midrash, they call it a traditionist feminism, meaning a feminism that is connected to tradition, more specifically to Sephardic tradition, and that is in dialogue with sources that are very often very upsetting, but other times also give a lot of hope and a different way of looking at halacha and the place of women in Jewish ritual and in Jewish life in general.
So you have these meetings that I guess are fairly regular. Are there leaders who lead the discussions or the study?
During the first 3 years of the Bet Midrash, there were two organizers, and we were meeting in the Sephardic Educational Center in the Old City of Jerusalem. So the meetings were bi-weekly. So every 2 weeks we would meet from around 5 or 4:30 until 9, 9:30. And every other week we would have online learning. We are not learning there anymore, and then we moved to the Van Leer Institute. And this year we are transitioning onto a new model that we still have to define. But basically there is a Talmud teacher, there's also lecturers that come from outside of the Bet Midrash, very well-known lecturers and professors and rabbis in Israel are supporters of the Bet Midrash, and people as well known as Chaviva Pedaya or Meir Buzaglo have been among the teachers of the Bet Midrash, and we have the support of other well-known rabbis like Daniel Buskila or Rabbi Chaim Ovadia, who have also been teachers at our Bet Midrash.
You mentioned activities. What other kinds of activities do you have?
So Arevot has different groups that do different activities. So one of them is called Metaxot, and Metaxot comes from Tekes. Tekes is ritual in Hebrew, and so what they do is they renew traditional Sephardic and Mizrahi rituals, especially rituals that have to do with women, and they renew them and make them relevant for us today. So it's a group of women that through certain rituals and tradition repair the historical connection among families and also the historical connection of individuals that hadn't had the opportunity to really know their own culture because of this cultural erasure that we spoke about before. And through these rituals, you come to reconnect with that past. So that's the task of that's what Metaxot do. And there's another project called Bat HaMizrach, Daughter of the East, which Yafa Benaya is in charge of, and what she does is creating learning materials and basically texts written by Sephardic and Mizrahi female intellectuals, both Torah scholars and intellectuals, such as Flora Sasson, Jacqueline Kahanov, and so many others. And so she creates these materials that can be used to learn about this Sephardic Mizrahi female intellectuals. And we are also now, only now, beginning a new program with the help of Rabbi Chaim Ovadia, called Morot Tzedek, which is a program for women to learn Sephardic sources and Sephardic halachic methodology, so as to be able to make our own halachic decisions and to be able to assist others in making their own halachic decisions, and to basically bring more justice into not only into the discussion about halacha, but also into the Jewish world and the non-Jewish world.
This is very modern.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think it's very necessary. It's very, very necessary that Sephardic women will be part of the discussion about the very rules that govern their life and their exclusion from not only from halacha, but in general, from everything that has to do with the intellectual development of Judaism is something that is just unacceptable. Especially when we have amazing examples of women that historically have participated very actively and in brilliant ways in the intellectual and moral development of Judaism.
Can you tell us something about the members, how old they are, and were they born in Israel?
Mm-hmm. So this is one of the most interesting things about Arevot. So you have women that are in their 70s and women that are in their early 20s. There's a very wide range of ages, and the vast majority of them were born in Israel. I think I'm one of the few that wasn't born in Israel. But I mean, a lot of them were born in Israel or arrived in Israel at a very young age. And as I said, the majority of them are Mizrahiot, and there are some that are not.
And the ones who are, I suppose, of Moroccan descent mostly?
There's everything. There's Moroccans, Persians, Yemenites, Tunisians. There's also like combinations of different origins.
Do most of these women work?
Yes, most of them work, and also most of them, or a good number of them, have a degree, an academic degree. And yes, all of them work. They're in no way part of a Mizrahi upper middle class. So the effort to attend these meetings is great.
Have any of them had any problems with their families because of this activity? Because it's very almost radical.
I think that everybody, because Arevot is such a diverse group of women, I think there's room to frame it in ways that are not threatening. I don't think that any of the women there have had any problem with their families, at least not that I know of. Because, as I said, there are many different ways of being in Arevot, and it's not I think it's a very radical thing what happens in Arevot, but there are ways of being in Arevot that are not radical. You can find your place and be a very traditional woman in many, many senses, and still feel comfortable there. This is actually one of the principles of Arevot, being a space in which everybody can come as they are.
What are your future plans as far as your work mm-hmm. goes?
Next year, I am going to be a postdoctoral fellow at University of Calgary, in the province of Alberta, here in Canada, and then I'm going to continue working on my ethnography of Arevot and writing about Mizrahi feminism, and hopefully I will finish my book about autobiographical narratives of Moroccan Jews in Israel and Argentina. So that's the plan for next year. And then we have to decide. I really want to go back to Israel. My husband wants to spend some time in Spain. So we'll decide what to do when time comes. But this is the plan, more or less.
Thank you very much, Angie.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, that's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you. So please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is EnglishCorner@RadioSephirod.com. See you next week.